Welcome to The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. The coffee is hot, the conversation lively, and we're talking real estate. I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., bringing you news and information from the real estate world. So pull up that chair, get out the coffee and pen and pencil, and let's join in the fun. Good morning and greeting to you, our listeners, here at KEST 1450 AM. My name is Cliff Perotti. I'm your host here at the Property Beat, along with my co-host, Miss Lisa P. Good morning.
Hello, Cliff. How are you this morning?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm okay.
And we also have
Anthony.
Anthony in the booth, yeah. I've got to go, oh, it says Carlos in here. It's not. It's Anthony. Good morning, Anthony. How's it going, man?
Very good. How are you guys?
You done running back and forth? I see you running around out there like a crazy man. They got you doing stuff. All right. Well, folks, if you are new to the Property Beat, this is a weekly show where we talk real estate with you, our listeners. We'll answer questions for you. We'll bring hot and interesting topics for you. And each week we feature an industry influencer. So that's somebody out there that's doing something interesting in the world of real estate. And today we are going to be chatting with Patrick Holman, who is an author and a speaker on the subject of condo homeowner associations and just what the do's and don'ts are there. This is such a hot topic, especially in cities like San Francisco. He'll talk about what you should be on the lookout for when buying a condo, what you should be thinking about if you're on that board running that condo, wondering why in the heck did I ever volunteer for this job. It's going to be fun, so it should be interesting. You know, if you have a question and you want to join us, just give us a call at 415-431-8255. Again, 415-431-TALK. But before we get to our guest, what's going on, Ms. Lisa P.? Let's check in on the real estate world with you out there. What's going on?
Well, remember last week when I said that there was 24 high-end listings?
Yeah. We wanted to check out what was happening in the absorption.
You know, there hasn't been much. I've been monitoring. Either that or everybody's late to report it. But I haven't seen much, many things going into contract. And also this week there was another, buttload of properties that came on the market?
Yes, there's a buttload of properties that came out. Okay.
You know, and when I'm out there and I'm looking at these prices, I'm going, value? Really? And I think that we're starting to see some overpricing.
Well, in fact, let me play with that a little bit, because I was having a conversation with a consultant yesterday who you know and love. One of the things that came out was that there were two listings that were brought on in the high end that were literally priced at half the per square footage rate as all of the other properties. And they were large, like 7,000 square foot homes, but instead of being priced like at $900 a foot, they were suddenly at $450 a foot. And we're wondering and watching, because the conversation was, wait, is this meaning we're about to have a minor correction? Because this is suddenly going to drive, these are going to be the new comps.
Right.
And is it going to suddenly drive the prices down a little bit? Or are these going to be frenzied? Is it a pricing strategy, do you think, to frenzy multiple buyers and try to get that overbid thing going?
I think it could be both.
It could be both.
Yeah, because I did see a property that was grossly underpriced, and I'll be watching that one.
You know, and there's also, you and I were talking about this briefly on the way in here, we're seeing a real push on auctions.com seem to be showing up suddenly.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, you know, so in part of the discussion that I had yesterday, there was so what's happening is auctions.com is working with lenders that are in short sale situations, and the lenders are pushing this service onto the homeowner, mm-hmm. saying, you know, hey, we think you should try this to try to sell the house. And so in one example that I recently saw that got accepted yesterday, the property went up for auction. Mm-hmm. Client wins the auction, mm-hmm. ends up paying what they would have. It ends up paying $20,000 or $30,000 less than they would have had they just gone and just bought the house in a normal marketplace.
Is it because people are afraid of the auction, so there wasn't that much activity?
You know, I don't think so. I just think that the nature of an auction, right? If you think about when you go to like art auctions and so forth, they start low,
right,
with the idea that they get the bidding frenzy going and everybody gets in that lather and they go, oh yeah, I got to bid and bid. Well, when that doesn't happen, but they put it out there at auction saying it will sell at whatever price is accepted,
mm-hmm,
suddenly you have a lower price being obtained than you think you would have. In addition, the auction company charges the lender 5% to do their job. So they pay. So now the lender is paying a 6% commission or a 5% commission or whatever they're paying to the real estate broker,
mm-hmm,
and they're paying this 5% fee to the auction house. So their load on the deal went up to suddenly 10 or 11%, and they got less than what they would have gotten had they just put the house on the marketplace for sale. So if they, if they ended up netting 15% less because they used the auction, that wasn't such a brilliant move on their part. But
okay, so
they're lenders, so who?
So what's the position of the person who? What's their title? The person at the bank who made this decision?
Idiot. Unemployed.
No. Where I was going with this is the guy probably got a big fat bonus, or he will at the end of the year.
Well, okay, so there is some truth there. One of the things that I learned a few years ago was that the asset managers who are in lenders,
mm-hmm,
do get bonuses for getting these properties off their books. So now, no matter what the cost, as long as they get rid of them. So it's like, all right, wait a minute. Now I wonder what the real load is to the poor bank who's, I guess I shouldn't say poor bank.
Well, it's not even the bank. Well, it's the trickle-down effect, so it's not the bank.
I wonder. I wonder if that asset manager is getting any part of that $700 billion we gave those guys. Probably not. So, okay, well, that's interesting stuff going on out there. So how can people become part of this conversation today?
Well, they can give us a call here at the Property Beat by calling us at 415-431-8255. That's 415-431-8255. They can also email us with questions at questions@thepropertybeat.com or hit us up on Twitter @thepropertybeat.
There you go. And in case you missed the show and you want to keep up with the conversation, visit our show tunes. Our show, it's singing time. Our show archives on iTunes or at thepropertybeat.com website. We'll be right back with some real estate news for you right after this.
Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com.
It's time for some real estate news. Shoot it our way, Miss Lisa P.
All righty. Well, hot off the presses, Courtney Cox and her husband David Arquette have listed their home in Beverly Hills. It's in the Truesdale Estate for $19.5 million.
$19.5 million.
Yeah. They were trying to sell it off market, and so they just decided to list it and see what happens. But the interesting thing to me was they bought the house in 2004 for $5.45 million.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Did they put any money into it?
It doesn't really say so. I'm sure they put in a couple $1 million would be my guess, but I suspect that their poor real estate agent, whoever's listed that property, is a victim of seller-assisted financing because...
Seller-assisted pricing.
Yeah, pricing.
Yeah.
Thank you. Sorry. They're going to need seller-assisted financing.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But I'm also looking at a little side note, and it says, California home sales reaches 7-year high.
The number of sales,
Yeah, but it's... Well, and I would suspect that a seller would be thinking, okay, sales are up. That means I can jack up the price.
Yeah,
blah,
I can
blah,
get
blah,
more
blah.
For my house.
And obviously, the little cougar, Courtney, and her ex-husband, David, have been following this, and I wish them the best of luck.
All right.
Irritating.
Well, you know, we need a sound bite for overpriced or something that just kind of gets it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to hit a couple of international spots just to kind of give you a flavor of what's happening out there in the world. Because, you know, when the Fed yesterday announced they're not really going to be doing any changing from what they're doing right now, and interest rates, of course, dropped down again. And so it's just the economy is just not there yet. Well, globally, we're seeing this huge mix across the world there. So in London, if you're living in London, the London Councils, which is a group of local authorities there that compile data and help make recommendations to the governments, local governments, and development. They provide development stats and so forth. Well, they say that by 2021, London will need another 800,000 homes. 800,000. And they're saying that part of that, 283,000 of that demand, is actually just to satisfy the current backlog. So London is having this crazy over-demand, under-supply. And then you float down to Spain, and Spain is in this opposite effect. They're saying that their prices are down 12% from a year ago, and they have enough inventory. Well, here's the way they put it. For every person buying a home, there's 10 homes selling. So there's just this glut. They say they have as many as 1 million empty houses. They suspect,
so that sounds like a place to go buy.
That's if you, yeah, that's exactly right.
There's going to be value there.
Donde es home? La casa. There you go. So go to Spain, buy that super good deal. What else you got for us?
Well, some of you guys might know Mark Zuckerberg, Mr. Facebook, I should just call him, bought a place, although it has not been confirmed.
Mm-hmm.
He bought a place in Dolores Heights, a little pied-à-terre, and he paid $10 million for it, and he's doing quite a bit of renovations, or actually a bunch of permits have been taken out. He's got $720,000 for the first floor office, $750,000 for additions to the lower floors.
That's in the Chronicle, right?
Yeah, this was in Sundays.
Yeah.
$65,000 for a kitchen and bath remodel. That's
That doesn't sound like much. Yeah.
$60,000 for a greenhouse. $30,000 for
like
exterior.
A lot of greenhouse. Well, wait. So where is this place?
This is in Dolores Heights.
So
I feel
Dolores
bad
Heights.
For his neighbor, but this is the part that really cracks me up. So, okay, so you got this guy. He's got a buttload of money. Going to do all these renovations and whatnot. So earlier this year, he gets a complaint from a neighbor who is upset because, you know, they're starting to rip out the external walls. They do it without permits. I mean, really?
Well, you know, he doesn't have to care about permits anymore because he's no longer a U.S. citizen.
Well, yeah.
Didn't he give us his citizenship and go someplace else so we didn't have to pay taxes or something crazy? Anyway,
well,
all right.
So they're not confirming that they own this 5,523 square foot four-bedroom home. So we'll see.
Okay. And I'm going to bring you a little bit of news from Miami. So in their marketplace, so there, this is a clue that something's really changed in our markets. In Miami, they're seeing a huge rise in something called off-plan purchases. We here in our marketplace, we call them pre-construction sales. So let's say a developer is going to build a big high-rise, like Millennium Towers here in San Francisco, and they're going to build this tower. Before they've even broken ground, they put up nice little home-selling thing, like a trailer, and they put beautiful posters up and ads, and they get people down there, and they say, you want to buy in this complex before we've even built it, and look at how wonderful it's going to be. So then they get reservations from people, and typically in the past, reservations were made by putting like 20% down to secure the investment or to secure the deposit on the unit. And then as the unit, when the unit became available, then you'd get your unit, it'd be yours, and you'd have to finance it and close escrow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're now seeing that the 20% is now 50% in the Miami area. So people are coming in and buying units before the buildings have even broken ground with a 50% down payment, and they are building currently right now, there are more than 30 towers under construction, 30. And they have permits for another 120 on the way.
How high are those suckers?
They've got to be. I mean, these are huge. I mean, I'm looking at all these cranes in these pictures. And this was according to the World Property Channel. So it's just amazing to me that sometimes we just don't learn. But you know where their buyers are coming from? Asia, Dubai, Brazil, and Russia, and Bulgaria, and it's just all over the map. But that's it; it's all over the map. So that's our real estate news this week. We'll be right back with our mailbag and letters from you. Welcome back to the Property Beat, and it's time to hear from you, our listeners, as we direct our attention to the Property Beat mailbag.
And we have a question from Robin Mill Valley. He submitted the following question saying, my wife and I are short selling our condo, and we have an outstanding HOA due that the lender won't pay off. We're being told that we have to pay them before we can close escrow. Who's responsible for that? Is it us? Can we put that onto the buyer? What do you think?
So what do you think?
I think if they don't have the cash, somebody's got to pick it up, so it's probably going to be up to the buyer.
Yeah, so here's the ironic part. If you're the seller, so Rob, if you have the money and you were to go and say, oh, I have the money, I'll pay them off in escrow, the lender would say to you, no, we want that money.
Catch 22.
That's right. So you cannot pay it off in escrow, Rob. It's going to have to be either your buyer is going to have to pay it, which is typically what happens, or you're going to have to pay it off outside of escrow. So those are your only two options. And this question came in from Miss Jones in San Francisco. Said, I paid my $959.99 rent check with a check for $960. The management company sent me back my check with a three-day notice to pay the exact amount. Why wouldn't they just cash my check? I was just rounding off the amount to be nice.
Yeah, they could have put that penny to their principal.
The answer is Francisco rent control law. You cannot accept money for more than what the rent is, or you are violating that law as a landlord, and you open yourself up to all sorts of problems. So, Miss Jones, you got to get the exact amount.
I would bring in cash. In the amount of...
In pennies.
Exactly.
Here's $959.99.
Exactly. All right. Happy counting.
That's it for our mailbag this week. If you want to get your question read live on the air, go to our website at thepropertybeat.com. Simply click on Submit a Question at the top of the page. We'll be right back with our guest.
Hi, this is Cliff Perotti, host of The Property Beat. So you may not know this, but we are sponsored by a local real estate company here in Northern California called Lyon & Foster International. The good folks at Lyon & Foster are an international luxury real estate company, helping home buyers and sellers as well as investors, whether they're buying or selling a home locally here in the Bay Area or abroad in a foreign country. So if you'd like some help or like to discuss those opportunities, please give the folks at Lyon & Foster a call. You can reach them toll-free at 855-367-4200. Again, 855-367-4200. Or you can email them at thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com. Again, that's thepropertybeat@lyonandfoster.com.
All right, welcome back. This week we're joined in the studio here by our guest, Patrick Holman, author and speaker on the subject of condo HOAs. He's written what I consider the definitive book on the subject for consumers called, and I'm just going to read it right off the book, Condos, Townhomes, and Homeowners Associations, How to Make Your Investment Safer. I love the bottom. Financially, is your association running on empty? So this is going to be fun.
I hope not.
I know. It's like, so welcome, Patrick.
Hey, welcome, Cliff. Man, Lisa, I'm good to be here.
It's been, 2 years since I last spoke with you?
Yes.
It's great to have you back on the show, and I know that, you know, this is such a hot topic. You know, Patrick, your show is one of our most listened to podcasts, so it just tells you you're in a high-demand subject area.
It is, because 63 million Americans live in what I call shared expenses housing. And it is sharing those expenses with others can get dicey, but you can also benefit from it. So it is a hot topic.
I love that. I'm thinking, did our, you know, when our kids came back from college, they were in a shared expense housing environment. Oh, my gosh. Okay.
So, Patrick, since you are a returning guest, you know the drill. We're going to ask you to tell something embarrassing about yourself. So have at it.
Okay. Well, I saw that question, and what occurs to me is, it's slightly real estate related, but mm-hmm. among the 40 owners in our little complex, we are the most affordable housing in this pretty nice upscale zip code, mm-hmm. and we have mostly folks who are getting by on Social Security checks and maybe tiny investments, but by planning and cooperating, we can actually get by on not very much money. So that is, I thought people could relate to that.
Okay.
Getting by on your Social Security check or whatever. But
yeah,
that's
a tough thing these days, especially in urban environments. It's really hard.
Yes.
So it's lean living.
Lean. I like that. Lean living. That's a new phrase. I like that. Yeah. So we'd like to remind our listeners, if you have an HOA question you would like to ask our guest, give us a call, 415-431-8255.
So can you give us a little bit of background? Like, how in heaven's name did you get involved with homeowners association?
Yeah.
It had to be you saw these people running the boards and you went, OMG, I can do this better.
Well, it did sort of start that way. I'm in an unusual situation. I think most Americans move about every 7 years, but I've been in the same place. In my starter home, I'm still here.
Oh.
31 years later.
Wow.
Wow.
So what I did was buy this affordable little condo, and some of the most affordable ones are in converted apartment buildings, and mm-hmm. that can also be a danger zone if the developer just slapped on a coat of paint, but you had bad wiring and bad pipes and all those things we've been through, and we've worked our way through those one crisis after another by pooling our money and planning. But that's how I got started. And what tipped me off that I might be onto something interesting was in 2005, when some of my freelance writing work was running low. I thought, at the nearby university in Louisville, mm-hmm. what non-credit class can I teach that people might want to come and listen to? So I called it Condo and Homeowner Association Best Practices. I thought I might get 4 or 5 students, but I got 231.
Oh, wow. Dude, you are popular.
Wow. No, that just tells you the subject is hot.
Right.
Wow.
And they're usually the volunteer board members, sometimes the property managers. But it's a fascinating area of financial literacy for Americans and people around the world. And that is because about 2 million people volunteer on their HOA boards in the United States out of the 63 million people who live in that shared expenses housing. And a lot of times they walk in cold and they don't have experience. Yet, that is where there is $4.2 trillion worth of real estate value in the United States.
Wow.
$4.2
trillion. Wow. Huh.
So those people are managing it. They got a lot of responsibility on their shoulders.
Yeah. Tell us about your book. How did you come to write it?
It started more than 10 years ago when I was trying to begin a long-term renovation plan for the older buildings where I live.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And it's the urban planners call it a tier one suburb. That means it was built between the First World War and 1970. You know, a lot of times in most cities, they might be 5 to 8 miles from the heart of downtown, but it's mm-hmm. still a leafy and a green place, but kind of gentrified. Mm-hmm. And we really needed to do some serious updating. So I learned about reserve studies. I wasn't even familiar with that term before. It's only the law in 7 states out of the 50 that you have to even do a reserve study. Legislatures never require that you fund it, but I think it's very wise that that there be that engineering and accounting, you know, game plan for the future, but we'll eventually get there. So that's how I got interested in it, and I had to convince my own neighbors, all of modest circumstances, mm-hmm. that we needed to plan for the future and pool our money, and we'd be by okay. So, you know, I hit the road to nearby cities like Cincinnati and Indianapolis and would go to this group meeting or that. And then I started to take money out of my 401k, which probably isn't a great idea, but I would travel to the East and West Coast and to the higher population areas of the United States and find out what's going on, because it was so important that people be realistic about these things.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree with that one. You've seen a lot of associations, I presume. What are the top three problems besides the people that are on the board or the members? What are the? I guess I'm
besides
talking
your
from
neighbors,
a,
yeah.
I'm yeah. talking from experience. But what are the top three problems that you typically see with an HOA?
I think the top three are in the areas of financial strength and management, day-to-day management, and then rules and enforcement. Those are, to me, the top three areas where there's trouble. But a slight background on that.
Okay.
Part of this is all a psychological thing, not just the math and science of the buildings. Most people in the United States and other places of the world, we grew up in single-family homes, and without really being aware of it, we have a single-family home mentality. And that is that you really don't need to know exactly when the roof is going to wear out and when your wiring is going to wear out. You just know that those are big, big expenses, and you want to put it off as long as you can.
Mm-hmm.
But when you do, if you're a baby boomer who's retiring and downsizing or first home buyer, and you want to choose the shared expenses housing, it is a totally different deal where the mindset is you must know the math and science of the buildings and know the finances, because that is where it's a real game changer. And people, they move into these a lot of times with that single-family home mentality.
Mm-hmm.
And what's even more dangerous is if they have that on the board, thinking, oh, we'd rather not plan. Let's not, you know, make people mad by raising the fees and not even having a plan. So it's the mindset of knowing that you have to plan and be ready.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I feel like I'm stuck in the middle because we do have a condo and a single family. It's like, oh, I think I need to see you offline.
It sounds like a therapy session.
I was going to say marriage counselor. You probably, yeah. Well, actually, you probably are a little bit of a marriage counselor.
Oh, I'll bet. You know, how do you, I don't know. You know, Patrick, you've been doing this a long time. Not only have you been so bold and brave in volunteering, but you've also just, I got to believe you've worked with and talked with a lot of people about their stories. You've probably heard some whoppers, I'm assuming, out there.
Yes. Thousands and thousands of stories.
Do you think that, so I'm going to jump ahead to one of the questions I wanted to ask, which is, do you recommend anybody volunteers for their board?
I think if they're predisposed to be involved, that it is a good... It's a good thing. Sometimes I compare condo associations and patio homes and townhomes to like a nonprofit church organization, where it is a nonprofit group and your goal is good, but the politics of all the people there is always difficult whenever you have a lot of human beings together. It starts to get kind of political and dicey. And what I've seen in the most successful associations is excellent communications, total transparency about the finances. Just last night, you know, people in the parking lot stopped me, and I listened to them for a half an hour, and it's giving that kind of time that builds the trust, and you have to be both competent and committed, but really they have to sense that you care. So for people on the board, some really bad things, and people can tell you, if some poor soul has an unmet power need and they want to be bossing people around.
Yeah, that tyrant that gets the ongoing forever president. It doesn't even have to be a condo association. We see those people out there every day.
that's where the psychology of it comes in. And the only thing I recommend that people do is that when that kind of behavior manifests itself, it will usually galvanize a group of committed people to step forward and run for the board and win, and then change it back again. You know, it calls forth the best in people to unseat them if they're that, you know, power hungry or kind of a clipboard Nazi or whatever.
A clipboard Nazi, yeah. Like, you know, it's funny because like so I was talking to a current HOA president, a small building, 8 units here. You know, we get a lot of these TICs that get converted into tenancy in commons that get converted into condos here in the city, and a lot of times these are smaller buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you kind of think about the rule of volunteering, you only get about 10% of the people that ever step up. So when you only have 8 units in a building, there's typically only one person that's willing to do it all, and then they get yelled at by all the other people because they're not doing a great job, and then they say, well, fine, you want the clipboard? Here. And they go, oh, no, I don't want the clipboard. You keep taking the clipboard. I just want to complain.
Yeah.
Ugh.
That the numbers are key, and the IREM, Institute of Real Estate Management Annual Survey of Properties, they do not even count condominium associations with less than 12 units.
Wow. And there's a lot of them out there.
Oh, there's a ton of them, and they are affordable housing. But that's part of the reason that if they're bigger, you have a greater efficiency, and you know, you can scale up. But if it's really tiny, you know, it's easy to not have a leader step forward. That's why it's a problem. And some schools of thought is that those should always remain apartments, so at least the landlord would hold it together.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our guest, Patrick Homan. And we're back with Patrick Homan, author and speaker on the subject of homeowners associations. If you have a question you'd like to get to our guest, call us at 415-431-TALK.
Okay, I have a question.
Okay.
You're going to buy, you know, you're going to go, you're going to buy your condo, and you look at all the financials and all that junk, which most people don't understand. How do they know if the HOA they're about to, you know, the price they're going to buy, how do they know if their HOA is a good one? And what do you... how do you find out?
Yeah, how do you find out before you're suddenly in bed with all these of your 52 neighbors?
Right. Lisa, that's an excellent question. And here's what I usually say.
Okay.
There's five areas that I think you have to take a close look at when you're buying any kind of shared expenses housing. Mm-hmm. And those five areas are, have they done a professional reserve study?
Mm-hmm.
That is number one for me, and I can give you more details later.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you can also ask about FHA approval.
Oh,
now, some really high-end condo associations don't want to bother with that,
mm-hmm.
right.
But you know, the amount that FHA will approve varies, as you know, by county in the United States, you know,
right.
county by county.
Price-wise,
and, yeah, much higher in the East and West Coast. And then third, people hardly ever ask this, but do you operate from a preventive maintenance checklist? I don't mean just spring and fall. Could be monthly. Some high-rises, you need a daily list of things that have to get done. To me, that's the only way to stay proactive about running the property.
Mm-hmm.
You must, and this is not brain surgery.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
You've got to have a list. And then the fourth thing I say is to ask this simple question when you're buying. Who would I call if there's a roof leak or a plumbing problem?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the answer...
Who are you going to call?
Yeah.
The answer to that will tell you one of three things. It could be either self-managed by owner volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
It is managed by a part-time off-site portfolio manager, which has its own set of problems, but it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And then third, the best situation is a full-time on-site manager. Usually only the very largest associations have that.
Right.
But knowing the volunteer structure is very, very, I mean, knowing the management structure is really important, and it'll clue you in to how solid they are.
Okay.
And what's the fifth thing? You got reserve study, FHA approval, preventative maintenance checklist, who you're going to call.
Yes. And then I have, even though it's 30 pages of legalese, read the master deed and the bylaws. You know, when people buy health insurance, do they read the 60 pages of what's covered? Usually not. They don't. So, you know, this is life on earth. In Florida, you've got to have a one-page summary of the key points. So I would say when it comes to the master deed and bylaws, you can at least ask about the hot-button issues where 80% of the trouble comes from.
Mm-hmm.
And those are... what are the policies about pets?
You know, I was just going to say, well, what about the dog issue or the cat issue or the chinchilla or the rooster or whatever the hell they want? Yeah.
Yes, that is, you know, pets will always be with us. But 60% of American households have pets. And sometimes when boards get really irate about doggy poop that never gets cleaned up, they have a blanket rule, no more pets in this place. But that will really diminish sales because people want pets.
Right.
Some places have a, you know, your dog cannot be more than 16 pounds. Smaller dogs mean a smaller amount of poop. I mean, this is very, very basic here.
Oh, God.
The other hot-button topics are, you know, what is the maintenance fee? What's the collection policy? What happens if you're late?
Mm-hmm.
What are the architectural rules if you want to alter anything?
Mm-hmm.
What are the rental restrictions?
Mm-hmm.
That's really important.
Yeah.
That's really important.
And parking. Parking. A lot of, you know, close to the city condos, they might even sell a space for up to $500,000 and,
yeah.
you know, little as 20 or... Just you want to know about parking and guests and all that
yeah.
kind of stuff.
Wow. So, you know, we just had an agent who literally lost a transaction. They were representing a buyer, and they were buying in a condominium complex. And when they got to the lending, it was FHA approved, right? So that means, you know, and we can talk about that because it's what jogged my memory on this. But what happened was the lender looked at the financials of the HOA and said, they do not have enough reserves to repair and maintain this property. We will not lend on this property. Is that a pretty common experience? I mean, your headline on your book kind of indicates that most of these HOAs, you know, that's a big danger spot. They may be in a very poor fiscal situation.
Cliff, you've touched on the holy grail.
Yeah. Wow.
Of all,
wow, I knew I'd touch that holy grail someday.
Of all association living. Because the problem, unlike the bank crisis in the 1980s and the other one in 2007, is that of these 320,000 associations in the United States,
mm-hmm.
nobody tracks the finances.
Mm.
Nobody tracks it. And if it were, you'd see that about 80% or more don't have enough money. It's like an underfunded pension plan, which gets a lot of media coverage, and people understand what that means. At 80% of the associations in the United States, there is a pension crisis.
Right.
They are not putting in enough to actually maintain the buildings.
You know, and but okay, so let's say that let's go back to this 8-unit little place, and these people are all... they've all stretched themselves to the end of their financial abilities to buy these little condos, and they've
mm-hmm.
now got them. They're, you know, everybody's 1 month away from an unemployment thing, so they don't have a lot of reserves typically themselves,
mm-hmm.
and so they live this highly, I don't know, it's this younger lifestyle of highly leveraged, no reserves, and that's the way they carry on in their complex, right? So they're, because they, you know, I even asked this person, you know, so what? How's your level of reserves on the complex? You know, without looking at your financials, they said, well, you know, if we ever have an issue that comes up, we just all kick in money, and when we need to, we just do an assessment.
Well, and in most places, that's illegal.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm thinking. It's like, really? Somebody, because all it takes is one of those owners to go, you know what, you, Madam President, are not running this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
You keep giving me these capital calls for $5,000 when all you needed to do was raise everybody's dues by $30 a month and everybody would have had money.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Does a director face some kind of liability?
There's huge liability. Oh, enormous
okay.
liability. That's why a lot of people don't want to do it. And
I'm resigning. Oh.
No. The other thing that every association needs to know is that along with the insurance coverage that you buy for the property, of course, everybody still needs to have their personal homeowner's insurance for their box of air, which is
right.
really what a condo is, and their furniture.
Right. Right.
But the association buys insurance. But you also want to get directors and officers liability insurance. That is so critical. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, you never want to be a board without that. And in all the 50 states, there are laws to run nonprofit organizations, and usually short of having condo laws, condos operate under the local state laws for running nonprofit associations. And quite often, you need to buy directors and officers liability insurance
mm-hmm.
because we live in such a litigious nation.
Yeah.
And that's another thing, even with higher income condominium developments, it can be even more of a problem with owners suing each other because they have the means to do it, and that
right.
is as dangerous as a civil war.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, I'm actually, okay, I'm shaking my boots at the moment. All right, so so you talked about FHA, and most people don't really realize that. I won't say that we don't have FHA financing for a lot of condos, but there's, I'd say, well, I won't say that. There's probably 50% of our condos do involve some FHA financing in the lower
mm-hmm.
end because the
mm-hmm.
FHA levels are much higher here. But, you know, what do they have to do to maintain that FHA qualification?
It's rigorous, and now you have to recertify every 2 years.
Oh,
so it's not just once and you're good.
No, because, you know, if you think about litmus tests for financial strength, and you take a snapshot, you know, like an income statement, mm-hmm. then you would have to do it on an ongoing basis. But when condos were first built, and, you know, developers would almost invariably have a lowball monthly fee, and it wasn't enough to cover the place, even before 2010, to get FHA approval for a loan, you only looked at the condo itself, not the overall health, financial health of the association. That's insane not to do that. That's crazy. So now we're finally getting past the smoke and mirrors era of mm-hmm. condo financing, which went on for 40 years.
Yeah.
And I don't, in some ways it's necessary growth, but people are going to be realistic. But we've gotten to a place, and there are a lot of other places, where you do have a reserve study, you've got the right amount. You're pooling your money to pay for renovations. They're designed by an engineer. There's quality. We're on the other side of that turmoil, mm-hmm. and it is a good place to be. It's the difference between a lousy marriage and the benefits of a really good marriage.
And on that cue, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, where we are here at the Property Beat talking with HOA expert Patrick Homan. If you have a question you'd like to call in, give us a call at 415-431-8255.
I know you've been doing this for a very, very long time, so you must have one or two really good horror stories about HOAs. Can you give us an example of one, four?
The one I like to mention a lot was what we taped on a PBS story that was down in North Miami Beach, where there have been a lot of buildings, even big complexes, that were as young as 30 years old, and the maintenance was always so poorly taken care of. Of course, it's made even worse by the super strong storms that they're mm-hmm. getting now, and insurance companies not wanting to insure them. But those buildings, and North Miami Beach is the epicenter of it, have actually been condemned by the local code authorities. But that's happened in a lot of, you know, even outside of San Francisco. And in San Francisco, it a lot of times doesn't hit the news unless you have people who are displaced and out on the street and they're fairly vocal. Sometimes the owners try to keep it quiet and quietly get some money together mm-hmm. and start to make repairs so the building doesn't get a bad rap.
Mm-hmm.
Condemnation of the building is real. You know, if you don't pay attention for this long enough, that is the end of the line and you lose everything.
Wow. Wow. You know, it's interesting. I'm also thinking about tax returns. You know, these HOAs have to file tax returns, and if they don't file, I talked with one group that hadn't filed tax returns in 5 years. I mean, that's a problem.
It is, and that just shows you more about their level of maybe not very good management. You know, it's pretty easy to do because HOAs only pay tax. They're a nonprofit organization.
Yeah.
So they only pay taxes on the interest money that the reserve funds have earned, which is usually fairly low.
Right.
You don't pay any other taxes. So taxes generally are not a big burden. So often they forget to do it, though. That's another tip-off that they might not be run very soundly.
Right.
So maybe I should add that to my number six question of HOA.
What's that?
Where do you stand on your tax bill?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, are they up to date on their taxes? That's something that's truly funny because you wouldn't ask that normally. And you could suddenly find yourself in a situation where you buy a place, you find out they haven't filed tax returns in 5 years, and now you have a $10,000 CPA bill that everybody's got to kick in towards or something.
I had an idea back in 2005, and it was called starcertified.org, and I still have it dangling out there, and it would be a nonprofit organization like Moody's Bond Rating Services from 100 years ago.
That's a great idea.
Starcertified.org. And FHA kind of does this because they're so stringent every 2 years about are you carrying enough insurance, do you have any lawsuits against you, what are the rental levels. But starcertified.org would be all associations, and it would make it easier for consumers to quickly understand and grasp it.
I think that's a great idea.
It's a really good idea. You know, and we do have a lot of these online services now that HOA management companies that are using to upload their documents into. You know what I'm talking about, where like so that you get your buyer package and that includes all your HOA stuff. But I'm also thinking they never include tax returns in there, like a most recent return just to show that it's been filed. And there's no reason not to because it should match what the financials say.
Yes, yes. And usually that is so easy to do, and it's relatively small amount of tax that it's really bad news. The other thing that often people forget to do is that most of the associations in every state are registered as a nonprofit corporation with the Secretary of State's office. And if they don't renew that every year with, say, the $20 fee that there is, they can lose their status as an incorporated association. So that's another little tiny, very small mistake that could you could pay big time for that.
Yeah.
You know, we were just talking about downloading. You could tell from the tone of my voice that having to download those documents to me is not my most favorite experience.
Yes.
I think
says
that
the woman of technology.
Well,
yeah, right.
It pisses me off. I actually want to speak to a human being, and I find that I cannot do that. Are you feeling that this is a good direction we're going, or?
It's a good transition. It's bumpy in the meantime because people aren't used to it and they don't understand. But in California, there is about a 18-year-old firm based in San Jose that is spread throughout the state of California called HOA Document Review. And for about $300, they come in and they look at all the documents for you and they look at the reserve study if they've done one compared with how much money they should actually have.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like home inspection, but of the financial and legal side of the association. You can do it in California because you have a state requirement of a reserve study. In a lot of the other states, there is not that requirement, but for the most populous state, that is an option.
So I'm sitting on a board right now. I'm hearing this, and I'm saying, oh, man, reserve study, what is that? Who do I go to get a reserve study from?
That's a good question. There are usually, if you Google reserve studies, you know, tons of firms come up.
So you're basically telling me use the phone book. Okay.
But you want to get competitive bids on that.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, for example, where I live in Louisville, Kentucky, there aren't firms, but there are in Nashville and Louisville and Cincinnati. You know, there are in nearby cities.
Oh, bigger ones, yeah.
And it's only about a 25-year-old discipline.
Mm-hmm.
But you want to get somebody who has the there's one of two organizations that certify the reserve study folks,
uh-huh.
And one is it's called the RS designation reserve specialist, and it's not that hard to obtain, maybe a $100 course,
mm-hmm.
and it isn't yet certified by the local state governments, but you can find nearby firms plus get the competitive bid, it's just a wonderful thing because the front side is done by engineers. You know, when they actually walk the property and go on the roof and look at the foundations and then estimate the length of the estimated remaining life, and then the cost and the accounting side of the house takes over to establish what a monthly fee should be to sustain the place without special assessments. So it is only a 25-year-old profession, and there will be more and more folks doing that. But there's probably 500 of those firms in the United States.
Mm. What happens if the HOA needs money? What options do they have to stay afloat?
Lisa, that is a great question. And
I know the answer, unfortunately.
Well, it's limited. There's most local banks and other banks don't lend to condo associations because the perception is that they're very mysterious and hard to understand the finances, so they don't even fool with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason is that the condo itself is basically a box of air, and it makes collateral very hard to determine. So for that reason, for many years, there's generally been a handful of national banks that go after the condo business, and pretty much the other banks for financing don't even want to fool with it. So in the Bay Area, Union Bank, and then there's also Smart Street based in Atlanta, and Alliance Association Financial Services in Vegas. I don't have any ties to these, but they're the mm-hmm. pretty well-known players.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to go ahead and usually deal with them and have your deposits, and sometimes they also have mechanisms for collecting the monthly fees. But if you have that ongoing relationship with them as a bank, if you do need to get a loan, it's good to have that established relationship.
I would.
So is that the, so? All right. So they could borrow money.
But then
borrow
it,
money for a common common element improvement.
Right. Common area improvement. And then in terms of, I
it's
guess they can
pass down to the owner at some point.
Yeah, at some point,
right?
They either have to, now they have to cover the they have to make sure they can cover the cost of that financing, I'm assuming.
Through either an assessment or increase in dues?
Yeah, so I'm, I'm thinking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and they absolutely want to, they you have to, like the FHA, you have to prove that you're stable. I think in the next several years we're going to see more and more of this. And again, North Miami Beach is kind of the epicenter of it, where buildings get old and they fall apart and they eventually need to be torn down. And a lot of the condo laws are written like the condo is going to go on forever.
Right.
And usually the combination of lower income neighborhoods and then a lot of retirees who cannot find part-time work at all, it is they're underfunding the reserves and they don't have enough money to keep the building up. An earlier question that you asked was about some millennials maybe and younger people who are stretched really thin. And one of the things that I talk about is it's good to have a reserve study and know all the costs of your association, because maybe you can't really afford on your salary to have a household of one or a household of two. You know, that's something that's happened after the Second World War in the United States that hasn't happened in a lot of countries. Even before the Second World War, you know, most families lived multiple generations together in one house just because they couldn't afford to all go out on their own. So we're seeing the outer limits of that. And sometimes if you have an unrealistically low monthly fee and then it'll blow up on them because it's been so underfunded for so many years, you have to really ask, you know, are you making enough money to live in a place of your own? And take a really hard look at that.
Do people ever hire you as a consultant? Like, you know, I'm going to go and buy a condo building. You know, Patrick, can I hire you to come and walk the place and tell me just what you think?
No, nobody's hired me because I always do it for free.
Oh, God bless you.
Boy, you should probably have not said that.
Hey, Patrick, when are you coming to San Francisco?
You know, what a great intro. You could see a micro-industry showing up. Not like we have a termite inspector, where it's an HOA review inspector kind of service.
Well, that's the one that started in San Jose and Silicon Valley about 18 years ago, and the HOA document review. And they franchised it into L.A. and San Diego and other population centers in California. But again, that model works because reserve studies are required by the state of California. Not that you fund them, at least that you have the plan. So, but I think that is a marvelous idea, and it will eventually catch on in other places because a private sector can make money at it, and it is very much a needed service.
So this is the one that's $300?
Yes.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think that I'd almost have that more than I would have.
Because a termite inspection is important, right? But a lot of that is common area where, you know, it's going to be theoretically should be taken care of by the HOA. But this is a situation where if the HOA isn't financially able to even take care of the place, then you want to know that.
I think this is a hotbed for some of these little mom-and-pop HOAs.
Yes.
So how has the recession affected let's call it the HOAs as a whole?
It's like a lot of other businesses surviving an economic storm. I think there's sort of a shakeout of the people who had maybe a stronger foundation and could weather the long storm. In my own situation, where our buildings are older, you know, built at the Second World War and in the 50s, we have a 20-year renovation plan that started 10 years ago, and about 40% of our annual budget goes toward these capital renovations, you know, new boiler systems, new plumbing systems, new wiring. Now, what's been interesting, even though there have been more bankruptcies and more people who we didn't have a default on an HOA monthly payment until 2006 after more than 30 years.
Wow.
Not a single default, but then people were defaulting left and right. I mean, we had people buying and getting bank loans who didn't even have a job, but that was the crazy stuff of 07, you know, what was going on. But here's the point. Even though our revenues are down slightly because we have a few bankruptcies, we get about sometimes up to 50% off of the annual renovation cost because construction is so badly hurt during this long recession that you can get excellent firms just to keep their doors. each other off of an engineer-designed request for proposal for, say, new plumbing for us.
Right.
So we are getting excellent pricing over these 5 or 6 years, yet our revenues are down a little. So that is a way that we personally are surviving this storm and going to be better for it.
Is that still the case now, that you're still getting excellent pricing?
Yes.
Really?
And, you know, we never know year to year
mm-hmm.
whether construction is going to take off enough
right.
that pool is all, stretched. Next year we have to replace all of our roofs
mm-hmm.
because the insurance companies now want, they prefer, because of the climate change and more severe storms, to have roofs that are not more than 15 years old. So we're going to have to replace these earlier than we thought.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that we're getting the same good deals in the summer of 2014 that we have for the past 5 years. But you can see, even in this recovery, with so many architecture firms, 100-year-old architecture firms going out of business, you know, the construction sector in the last 5 years has taken such a hit.
Mm-hmm.
So I who knows what that sector is going to be like next summer.
Patrick, we're at the end of our hour, but I wanted to give you a shameless plug. How do people get your book? Where can they find information? I know you have a website. Give us all that scoop.
Okay. It is, the book's on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
and if you key in the word condos, and then it'll come townhomes and homeowner associations, it's there on
okay.
Amazon.
Good.
And then these kind of cool videos and things, the little sound bites, are at condohoainfo.com.
Perfect.
Those are experienced people that we videotape to our board members and property managers, just kind of in quick sound bites about what to look for. That's what got me the PBS interview and invitation to CBS New York. And, you know, it's just for the public good.
Yeah, great.
Great job, Patrick. Thank you.
Great job. It's such an informative subject. You're always a great guest. Thank you for being on the show. And thank you to our engineer and to Lisa Pete. We're out of here. Thank you very much. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks.
Well, that's a wrap for this week's show. Thanks for joining us here at The Property Beat, where real estate is part of your life. We hope you've enjoyed this week's show and encourage you to come back next week when we've got yet another lively guest and more real estate conversation. If you'd like to check us out on the web, you can find us at thepropertybeat.com. For now, I'm your host, Cliff Perotti, along with co-host Lisa P., saying, that's a wrap. See you next time on The Property Beat.